Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide, of course, to better cricket. It's a little audio show that we do to try and help you improve your game or improve the game of others. My name is David Hinchliffe, I look after things, and helping me to help you are two very fine cricket coaches. The first is the director of cricket at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Gareth, how are you?
I'm very good. Yeah. Looking forward to the next half an hour because it's raining and there's not a lot else to do.
Oh well, you know. Well, let's fill the time with something useful, shall we?
Exactly.
Or at least some flannel or something in between. Secondly, it's the director of cricket performance at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Have I got that right yet, Lavers? Am I getting that right?
It's head of cricket performance. We'll go with director for now. It sounds better, so very happy.
Yeah, the director gets to point at more things.
Yeah, I don't get to do as much pointing. I get to kind of do more running around, probably, I think. Clearing things up, picking up stuff, that kind of thing. But we've got rain down here as well, so we're going to be inside this afternoon. So a bit of a shame, but we've had great weather for the last 5-6 weeks, so can't complain too much.
Well, as always, it's glorious here, and long may it last, of course, because the sun always shines on the righteous. Let's answer a couple of questions now. These are questions that have been sent in by listeners to the show or readers and to the Pitch Vision website over at pitchvision.com. And how it works is we do our best to answer the questions, and then we pick a winner, which is a prize of an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And as usual, we've got two questions that have been sent in. And it's another question from our old friend from last week, Torpedo Thompson. Welcome back, Torpedo. And Torpedo has another question this week. He says, this weekend, I played a 2020 on a turf wicket that was a green top with lush green grass. But the turf was a bit soft. Bowlers were getting the ball to skid on and pop up at times. Because of these conditions, we were bowled out for 90 runs. The question I'm asking is what is a suitable game plan that you can have for those kind of conditions?
Wow. All the best, I would say, on that one, because you've got different types of reactions off of the surface. In a game where traditionally we're looking to really get on with it and it's meant to be a batting sort of dominated game. So I think the ball's in the hands of a bowler here, really, in terms of who's going to be on top, and therefore our sights and our goals need to, as a target that we're going to set, or maybe how we're going to go about a run chase, need to change accordingly. So I think in any wicket that skids and pops, what you've got to try and do is, it's not often the one that skids that causes the problem, it's the one that pops that causes most of the problem. So unless I'm facing somebody who is unbelievably fast, I will be looking to either stand as far down the pitch as I possibly can with a keeper standing back, or I'd be looking to walk at the batter and play normal cricket shots by getting my weight going back into the ball and trying to take as much length out of the ball as possible, because the skiddy one, unless it's skidding an inch off the ground, is less likely to cause you problems than the one that just that pops up off of the length or pops up from back of the length. So I'll be looking to try and create as many fuller balls as I possibly can, and then if the bowler adjusts and bangs one in, then the fact that my visual cues can kick in, I can probably end up playing some short sort of shot from a shorter ball. But that would be my plan. But they're unusual conditions, so as with any conditions, you go in with a plan and you adapt accordingly. The new ball might react differently on that pitch than a ball that's 10 overs old. Equally, there's only 4 overs for certain bowlers to bowl, so once you've got through maybe 2 of the opening bowlers bowling 2 overs apiece and saving themselves at the end, the ball might react completely differently off of the guys that are bowling in the middle or when the spinners come on. So you've got to take each plan to start with and then adapt off it. But to me, if I could take length out of a popping wicket in particular, then I'd try to do that as a batter.
It's I guess in 2020 cricket, something you see on television, big scores and flat tracks and guys hitting the ball through the line, Lavers, and you think to yourself, oh great, this is what we need to be doing. We need to score 160, 170, 180, because that's what happens. But actually you have to look at the circumstances in front of you rather than the conditions that maybe look the same on the television, but actually it's almost a different game.
Yeah, you've always got to have your brain working, and you've got to be thinking about, well, actually, what is a good score in the grand scheme of things? What's a good score on average at this ground, or what's a good score in 2020 cricket? What is the score that's going to win the game? And that's what you're working towards. We actually played in conditions that I would imagine were pretty similar to this on Saturday over at Brighton College, and it was some water had gone to the covers on Friday. I think it was Friday evening, and for whatever reason, there was quite a bit of moisture there, so it was very green. Pretty firm underneath, but the top inch or two was pretty soft actually, and it was going to do a bit, and it was going to be hard work for the batters. And we talked about a few different strategies actually. First of all, we had a group discussion about what creates the pop and what creates the skid. So effectively, the skid generally is an illusion. It's just the ball that isn't popping. So it's generally just keeping a bit low because it's not particularly hard pitch, but it's not doing anything unusual. It's keeping its usual path. But in contrast to the pop, it looks particularly skiddy. So the pop is when the ball's going through the surface of the pitch, and then it's effectively creating its own ramp to then ramp the ball up nice and high. So it's ramping itself by getting through the surface and putting a lot of soil in front of the ball, which then makes it go steep up in the air. So we talked about, when do we want that to happen, or when's that likely to happen? Now, Gareth spoke about it a little bit there, but the conditions are going to change as the day goes on. And we were playing a 40-over game on Saturday. And as the day went on, the conditions did change. So we said the key thing was working out what balls were going to pop and what balls weren't, based on length. And also, if you could, base it on the bowler a little bit. So the guys that hit the pitch a little bit harder, or possibly the guys were a bit taller, but the guys who bowled a little bit quicker and hit the pitch a bit harder generally got the odd ball to ramp a little bit more often. And they would do it from a certain length. Now, that length initially was pretty full. So guys were still hitting kind of the normal top of the stump's length, and that was actually popping up a little bit. Because of that, we decided that we had two options. We could get out, as Gareth said, and get 2 feet down the track, encourage them to keep trying to bowl the same length, so they're still trying to hit the stumps at that stage. And from there, anything that's short has to go, because it's going to be so slow when it pops, then you can give it a whack. And you're not really rushed on those short ones, which Gareth's kind of mentioned there, but because of the pace that's coming out of the ball with it popping, you should have plenty of time. But anything that's a long half volley, again, has got to go. You generally find that manipulation of the ball is the tricky bit in those circumstances. So manipulating ones and twos around is quite tough. So it becomes that classic block bash surface sometimes, where you've either got to give it a whack or you've got to get everything in behind and wear a few throughout the day. The interesting thing for us, though, was as the day progressed, the ball that was quite full wouldn't pop anymore. It became a bit shorter and shorter before it was only popping if it was really back of a length. As a result of that, we actually went right back in our crease and encouraged the bowler to pitch up even more, which meant they were pitching up into the area that was skidding onto the bat. And we went it that way. So we changed our strategy throughout the day, depending on what we wanted the ball and depending on the sort of trajectory we wanted the ball to go into the pitch. And we got a bit lucky. We had the right end of the conditions there, so it wasn't made too challenging for us. But by going deep in the crease, we stopped as many balls popping because we got the bowlers pitching up a little bit more. So interesting, different ways, and every pitch is going to be slightly different, but there's different ways to approach it. And the other thing you've got to be aware of is, what's your skill set on top of that? So we can recommend something, but there's always going to be different skill sets for different individuals. There's always going to be different shaped grounds. There are a load of things coming into it, but as long as you have a logical think about it, and you think about what the pitch will do in different circumstances, what skills you've got and how you can apply it to scoring the runs you need to score, then you'll probably do better than not good thinking about it at all, which is still going to be the approach for most people.
Next question is from Jason. And Jason says, what do you guys think makes a good cricket coach?
Great question. Well, I don't think there's any staple answer to it, but I think there are some sort of similarities that run through most of the best cricket coaches that I've had as a player and worked alongside as a coach. And I think we've got to accept that the influences on coaches are going to be very different, aren't they? Because we all come from different places. We've been brought up differently. Some have been to certain schools that probably have fantastic cricket programs. Others have been to schools that, you know, hardly have a program at all. Equally, you know, where we land is largely luck, isn't it, in terms of our geography and the services and the support that you can have around you as you grow up, which then informs you as a coach going forward, definitely. And, you know, if you're lucky enough to have a fantastic upbringing in a club or around a school thing, then you'll take that into your coaching. So the influences, I think, are pretty varied. I think the thing that we can control largely is how we go about our stuff and then how that informs us. So, for example, about you know, continual professional development, which anybody who is listening to this podcast is investing within their own CPD, which is fantastic. Anybody who reads articles on the Pitch Vision website and reads books and listens to people talking on podcasts and various webinars and stuff like that, people that go to seminars are generally investing in their own coach. And I think the dangerous fellas, although they're probably good coaches in their own right, are the ones that don't do that, because effectively what they're saying is that what they know is the way. And the bottom line, I've never met a good coach, a really good coach, who's stuck by their guns and being dogmatic by the things that they've said all the way throughout their career, because as we know from the conversations we have on this show, things change a lot. So, you know, what personal assets have people got that I've worked with and been coached by? Well, I think they've got a level of competency in what they're talking about. You know, that competency is geared around the basics, the fundamentals of the game, which is so important, you know, from batting, bowling, fielding. They've got that real sort of foundation, I suppose, to what they're talking about, how they understand the game, how they understand how people are different, how they understand different characters, I think is really good to have. And it's difficult to respect a coach that hasn't got a level of competency in those regards, or a number of those regards. Then they need to have confidence, you know, and certainly whilst confidence isn't just being brash and outspoken, as many of us can be, you know, some of the best coaches that I've had have got a quiet inner confidence, and you often see that happen and that come through when things are difficult, you know, when the team isn't playing very well, or when somebody isn't playing particularly well, that they show a lot of confidence. And as players, we tend to draw upon the coach's confidence to help build our own levels as well. So I think having a quiet or even an out there confidence is very important, because if you haven't got that, then I think players will see that and not really get drawn to you as a coach. Then connection. Now, connection is two things for me. Connection is connection with the people that are around you, and interpersonal relationships. And then the other one is connection to the game. As we've seen, certainly since 2003 when T20 cricket came in, the game has shifted quite significantly, and that's having an influence on every format. So if we're not staying up to date with that, and if we're not staying up to date with sports science and sports psychology and all of those things, then we're losing our connection to the things that really matter in the game going forward. And then the last thing is about having character, and that really comes back to when things don't go well. You know, what do you display as a coach? Because often people will look up towards a coach or towards a manager when things aren't going particularly well. And often if they are coping with that and they have good levels of resilience and bounce back ability and inner strength, then people will sort of thrive off that and will take little bits off that and then take it into their own game. So those four C's, which are competence, confidence, connection and character, all come from a bloke called Jean Cote, and he did a load of work on effective coaching back in the mid-1990s. And so I've not made any of that up, I've just adapted it really, and I use it as something that to assess my own coaching competence, I suppose, and ability on a regular basis.
It is a kind of a classic assumption, Lavers, that you, if you're a good coach, if you know how to, you know, teach someone a good technique. And of course, technique is an important part of the game, always will be, but it's definitely one part of a big tapestry, as Gareth has been saying there, isn't it?
yeah, it's a portion of what a coach needs in their skill set, really, isn't it? The technical side of it is going to be particularly valuable at certain stages of development, but there are other stages of development where the relationships you develop and your ability to communicate with people and your ability to support players through different things is going to be more important than having an understanding of how you can adjust someone's technique or improve someone's technique to play a particular shot. I often think about coaches' ability to kind of have impact at different levels, and you get some people who can identify errors, then you get some people who can identify errors and also tell you what the correct method is, then you get others who can set them on a pathway, and there's others who can support people through the whole process. So they've got a few different layers of support, and that doesn't necessarily again have to be applied to technique, but that can be applied to any strand of the game, whether it's improving from a physical point of view, whether it's improving mental processes or lifestyle support or tactically, there's lots of different things it can be, but yeah, there's a few different levels there that people are gauged at, depending on whether they're just pointing out flaws or at the other end of the spectrum they're taking people through a process and helping them manage their way to the end goal of improving. But yeah, technique is but a small part, and as you know, for those people who listen to the podcast, we do get some technical questions. But again, it's a small chunk of what we talk about, and there's a good reason for that. And cricket's so much of it is spread out through other facets, such as the mind and the group dynamic that is part of the game.
Yeah, it's sort of, I'm not sure where it comes from. Maybe it's sort of this idea that, you know, you can kind of just, you know, a cricketer is just a sort of machine that you can, you know, if you tweak the right things at the right time, that's, you know, that everything will come together, and then, you know, you'll get a robot that can execute the skill at the right moment. But, you know, people are people, and you can't, it's not machines, and that's where it starts to get complicated. But I do think that underlying assumption is something that needs to be thought about generally, and isn't necessarily, you know, you're just sort of pouring information into a person that is shaped like a jug. It's actually a lot more complicated than that, and it's a lot more, it's the word soft skills comes to mind, doesn't it? It's sort of, there's a lot more stuff going on that you need to be able to handle, and you need to look at that, the wider picture, than just how good does someone's cover drive look. It's about a lot more than that. And so if you look at it from a people perspective first, I think that's where you find coaches who are working at their peak and helping people as best they can.
Well, it's something that Gordon Lord always used to talk about, and he'll say that he got that from a number of different people rather than him coming up with the quote directly. But he would say that good coaches coach technique, and great coaches coach people. And I would be in agreement with that. I think for me, though, going back to the whole competency thing, if you've got an understanding of the foundation of technique, then that is something that people tend to look at first and foremost before the other things come on to become pillars of strength within your coaching. So it's great to say, let's just coach people. That's fantastic. But ultimately, you might not have that person with you if actually you haven't been able to give them anything whatsoever to help them to become a slightly better technical model. So to me, technique is a real big foundation piece. And then the other skills that come off the back of that then determine whether you end up being a good coach or whether you end up being a great one.
Yeah, it's almost, I mean, it's not quite like this, but it's almost like it's a bit of marketing, isn't it? You know, you want people to say, oh, he's a great coach, you know, because he understands technique and he's helped me from a technical point of view. And also, you know, technique is a fun thing to coach and to learn. So, you know, it's all good. But it's a little bit more down towards the selling yourself as a coach rather than the actual coaching, because you know the actual coaching is a bit more than that. But most people are not bothered about that side of thing, or on the surface at least, anyway.
I think for a lot of coaches as well, if you work with a player, the technique or the technical improvements or changes or support you offer someone is probably a bit more immediate in its feedback and its outcome of what the player gets from it in response. So you can make a change and a player can fairly quickly say, yes, that's making me better, or no, it isn't. So for some people, that is the... I don't want to say it's the quick fix, because that makes it sound like it's a bad thing, and obviously improving technique is a good thing we want to have, but sometimes that's the first thing you can change quite quickly, and it's the thing that for some people, not all, probably takes least time to get to know. Obviously some people, they do have their own methods which you do take quite a long time to get to know and to understand, because you can look at a player and say, well, that's not how it should be, but it still works for them. But the other areas of the game that you're coaching and trying to develop maybe take a little bit of more understanding and a little bit more getting to know. So it's a slightly longer game you've got to play if you're going to have a really positive impact from those other points of view.
And that is the end of the show for another week. We are going to do one more thing before we leave, and that's to decide on the winner of this week's competition. The online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com is up for grabs. And the two questions are from our friend again, Torpedo Thompson, asking about playing 2020 on a slightly unusual pitch, and Jason's question about what makes a good cricket coach. Which one did you prefer this week, Garris?
Well, I've got to go down the cricket coach route, because that is the best question around specifics that make up and underpin somebody as a cricket coach. So I'm going to go with Jason's this week.
Come on, Torpedo.
Again.
I'm being harsh on Torpedo. It's one of the best names ever, and he's got absolute donuts for me. Complete donuts. Sorry, bud.
One more week. Come on, one more question.
You'll get it. Bunny just nicks him off every time.
I am, yeah. You're a walking bonus point at the moment, Torpedo.
Well, Garris, if Torpedo wanted to get in touch with us, again, I'm sure he knows this already, but if anyone else wanted to get in touch with us or Torpedo, it doesn't matter to me, how could they contact the show?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That is correct. And Torpedo, even if you haven't got another question, we still need the answer of, is that your real name or not? We need to get to the bottom of that.
I can answer that.
You can also get us in various other ways. We have a bonus podcast section, which is available to Pitch Vision Academy subscribers over at pitchvision.com. If you do a search on pitchvision.com for Pitch Vision Academy, you can follow us, or you can friend us there, and you can get the bonus part of the show, which is not included in this section, and you can also get us through lots of other social media. So if you want to get us through Facebook, you can do that by going to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, or Twitter is @pitchvisionacad, and you can listen to the show on that, or you can contact us through that. That's completely up to you. You can also subscribe to the show through the old-fashioned RSS way. You can do that by getting your favorite podcast app, doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy and tapping on subscribe. That's free. And if you want to get all the old shows, there's a big archive over on pitchvision.com/academy, and click on the podcast link for all the details there. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Garris. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers, guys.